Quick announcement. Did you know that we have an ADHD Mums shop filled with resources designed just for you? These resources are packed with answers to the most frequently asked questions I get sent in via email. Everything from understanding ADHD and autism to practical tips for daily life. There's also a free assessment tool. If you're wondering about ADHD or autism for yourself or your little one, don't forget to check out the free assessment tool under free resources section on my website, adhdmums.com.au. This tool is specifically designed to help you access practitioners who truly understand masking and camouflaging, ensuring that you get value for your money after the long wait times and investment involved in assessments. So go over to the website, grab a resource, and support your journey. Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. This is where we deep dive into important issues that affect mums, especially those of us who are neurodivergent. I'd like to issue a trigger warning for this episode. In today's episode, we will be discussing topics on workplace violence, emotional abuse, bullying, coercion. These can be distressing topics, particularly for those who have experienced or witnessed similar situations. If you find any part of this episode triggering, overwhelming, please feel free to pause, take a break, seek support. All of the support services will be listed at the end. The content we are discussing today is heavy and can be distressing. However, it is also our responsibility to talk about it. Emotional abuse, whether it's at the workplace, at home, or in other relationships, often goes unnoticed or unspoken. And that's part of the problem. By bringing these issues to light, we help break the silence and start important conversations that can lead to change. Addressing workplace violence is necessary, not just for those who are affected directly, but for society as a whole. These conversations help to educate, create awareness, and ultimately shift the dynamics that allow these forms of abuse to continue. Yes, it's tough to discuss. Yes, it's tough to listen, but it's even tough for those who are living it. And that's why we're here, to take this responsibility, to make sure these issues aren't pushed aside, and to ensure that people feel seen, supported, and empowered to seek help or change their situations. We must create spaces where we can talk about the uncomfortable truths, because in doing so, we create more understanding, empathy, and most importantly, solutions. Both workplace violence and domestic violence are types of abuse that thrive on the power imbalance, and addressing the power imbalance requires a shift in how we view and handle the social dynamics across all areas of life. There is control and dominance in both, manipulation and gaslighting in both, fear and intimidation in both, isolation, psychological damage. There's also a gendered nature where both workplace violence and domestic violence is disproportionately affecting women, with men often in positions of power. Women are more likely to experience gender-based violence both at home and at work. And there seems to be still the societal expectation that men should dominate and women should be submissive, which plays a significant role in both places, perpetuating the abuse. Both workplace and domestic violence faces significant barriers to report abuse. At work, there's fear of retaliation, loss of livelihood or being labeled as difficult can keep people silent. At home, there's the fear of future violence, financial insecurity, the well-being of children. In both cases, though, these barriers reinforce the power dynamic by silencing the victim, survivor, and protecting the abuser. We need to continue to challenge the gender norms, such as toxic masculinity, rigid gender roles, and the expectation that men should dominate. To reduce domestic violence and workplace bullying, we need to challenge these norms and promote equality, respect, and collaboration. The particular people I spoke to on this episode were more talking about male bosses and being female, but we know it can happen male to male, female to female. But regardless, the unequal power dynamics that people play out will impact on other areas. So let's create some change. Today, we're diving into a topic that affects women across Australia, but it just doesn't get enough attention, the gender pay gap. And I know what some of you are probably thinking. We've heard this before, but here's the thing. This gap that I'm referring to isn't just about money. It's about how society values women's contributions. Women on average are paid 17.5% less than men for doing the same work. It's not just about getting paid less when you're doing the same job. It's actually about the deep-rooted beliefs, the outdated expectations, and structural inequality that remains here in Australia. Let's break it down a little bit. This issue is heavily influenced about what work women and men are supposed to do, air quote, and how they're, air quoted, supposed to participate in the workforce. Let's think about it. Why are jobs like social work, nursing, teaching so underpaid? Why do we continue to have the same discussions that nurses and teachers, social work, community care should be paid more? How many of us women have whispered to other women or said openly to other women, I bet you if nursing was a male-dominated industry, they would be paid more? Is it because these roles are less valuable, really? Or is it because they've traditionally been filled by women and therefore we just undervalue their contribution because that's what we do? Women are often overrepresented in lower paying industries, education, healthcare, social services, community care. And there's a lot of people out there that would say, oh, well, women just pick the industries that they're not paid as well. That's no one's fault. Well, that's actually not true because even when women enter higher paying industries like technology or finance, they still earn less than men doing the same jobs. There's actually been studies that have shown that even if you control education, experience, hours, work, location, the pay gap is still there. It's not about all of these factors. It's actually something bigger. And this here is when it's a structural issue. There's no way I can get through this podcast without mentioning the motherhood penalty. And I don't need to explain what that is because I know that you ladies get it. However, I can't not mention it and say that everybody knows. So we know that women's career will take a hit when they have children. Whether it's taking time off for maternity leave, reducing hours on childcare, picking up the majority of the unpaid labor at home so you can't take the promotion, these sacrifices often lead to a slower career advancement and ultimately lower pay. Whilst these women face this penalty, men often experience what I think is a fatherhood bonus. They show pictures of their kids at work and they present reliable, they need the money, they've got a mortgage, and they're seen as stable and committed employees after becoming fathers, which results, I believe, in better pay, promotions, and career opportunities. However, as soon as a woman gets married, there's all these questions around, well, when are you having a baby? Are you thinking about having children? What if they have maternity leave? Can we afford that? And suddenly there's all these questions and it's not about the skills or the resume or the references. It's about what that employee will mean for that company. And yes, this is illegal, but let's be honest, it still happens. It's not a question that's asked in an interview because it's not allowed to be, obviously. But it's just a way that society expects women to just shoulder the majority of the caregiving responsibilities. Women often feel like they have to choose between advancing their careers and caring for their families. And when women do make sacrifices to care for their children, it's often used against them later. So we're taught from a young age that we should just expect to juggle it all and our careers will come second to a family life. And this is not all women, of course. The majority that would be listening to this podcast episode would be women who are neurodivergent, who probably have neurodivergent children, who would be working part-time, full-time, or at home, and would be trying to balance it all, plus additional needs on top, plus appointments, plus the worry, plus the stress. I'm going to cross over to a friend of mine who's a man, and he's decided to be anonymous on this episode. And he would be one of the only men I know who has spoken to me clearly about how this gap has affected his wife and about how he realized that his silence has contributed to workplace inequality and what he's doing differently now. Let's listen to what he has to say. This is a voice actor. This isn't his real voice.
For the longest time, I thought I wasn't part of the problem. I believed that as long as I wasn't actively contributing to the sexist behavior at work, I was doing enough. I figured that if I wasn't making the jokes or belittling anyone, I was one of the good guys. But everything shifted one night, and it made me see things differently. My wife came home, crying over what seemed like something small to me. A comment about how taking extra time off to look after our kids had probably cost her a promotion. They'd given the role to a man who didn't have children. At first, I didn't get it. I told her the comment wasn't that bad and that she was overreacting. But then she broke down yelling and crying, telling me how that one comment represented years of being sidelined at work. It wasn't just this one instance. It was a culmination of sacrifices she had made for our family, sacrifices that were now being used against her. She reminded me that we started our careers at the same time, went to the same university, and yet I was making $50,000 more than her. I hadn't even realized it. She pointed out how she'd picked up the slack at home so I could focus on my career while her own was being held back. That hit me hard. It was like I had been blind to what was right in front of me. The next day at work, I saw it happen again. A man made a comment to a female colleague, something about how the winter flu season meant her attendance at work was so low she went through sick leave, paid leave, and was down to unpaid leave, and this was affecting her work. He said his wife gives his children vitamins, which keep them well through winter. She forced a smile and promised to do better, but as soon as he walked away, I saw her face fall. She looked crushed. That's when it clicked for me. I had been part of this culture for years, not by making the comments, but by staying silent, by letting it happen around me without saying anything. That moment was a turning point for me. I knew I couldn't just stand by anymore. It wasn't enough that I wasn't the one making the sexist jokes or dismissive comments. I had to actively stand up against it. I had to start speaking up. But here's the thing, it's not easy. Since I started this change, the guys at work have begun to laugh at me. They call me too serious or too woke, and they joke that I'm overreacting, that it's all just harmless fun. They don't see the impact those jokes have, the way they contribute to a culture that keeps women down. They now go to golf on weekends, drinks in the afternoon, and I'm not invited, as most of the women aren't either. I'm no longer in the club, and honestly, that sucks. It's not that women were not invited, because they were women. It's just that no one thought to invite them, assuming they weren't interested. I'm still learning, and I often make mistakes, but I try hard.
I love this guy because it highlights something that we don't talk enough about, that men can actually play a role in closing the gender pay gap. A lot of men and women don't realize that by staying silent, we're just continuing the culture that undervalues women. Okay, so what is workplace violence? This information comes from Safe Work Australia. Workplace violence can be any incident where a person is abused, threatened, or assaulted at work or while they're carrying out their work. So we're going to jump in now and listen to the recording. The recording's from Candace. She's speaking anonymously. This is a voice actor. This isn't her real voice. Trigger warning, this is a lived experience of workplace emotional abuse. Let's hear from her now.
My name is Candace, and for nearly a decade, I worked amongst relentless workplace bullying and manipulation in a toxic environment where women were constantly undermined. I had no choice but to stay. Working from home was essential because I had children with special needs who required constant care. But that didn't make the abuse any less damaging. My boss, John, cultivated a culture where men dominated and women were pushed aside. Men held all the senior roles while women were relegated to admin positions, except for me, because I had been there for so long. Despite my title as senior manager, I faced discrimination every day. I was the token woman in leadership, the person they used to prove that women could be in leadership positions in that company. John's behavior was relentless. He'd asked me to conduct research, and no matter how thorough or well done my work was, he'd dismiss it, questioning why I even bothered. Then in meetings, he'd take credit for my ideas, presenting them as his own, while accusing me of not working hard enough. It was a constant cycle of praise and degradation. One minute, he'd tell me how valuable I was, and the next, he'd belittle me to the point of tears, calling me weak and unprofessional, and then telling me I shouldn't question him if I can't handle him responding. The office was a boys' club, and when I was invited to leadership meetings, I was instructed to serve water or coffee. If I disagreed with anyone, I was labeled a Karen, even if logically the ideas presented made no sense. John's behavior was normalized, and if I didn't nod along with his ideas, I was berated publicly by him. No one else would agree, but no one would dare disagree. Some of the men in the office weren't entirely on board with John's behaviour, but they didn't do much to stop it either. A few would glance around nervously, apologise quietly to me after meetings, and say they didn't agree with what was happening, yet they never stood up to John. They thought that by offering a private apology, they were different from the others. But they weren't. They were just as complicit by staying silent. John would stand over me, point his finger, and yell at me if I presented a different view or if I didn't say anything. He would accuse me of not listening and being lazy. I also noticed that the only female contractors hired were young and attractive, and they were praised for their talents regardless of their contributions. They were paid well, given minimal responsibilities, and received public recognition at staff events. Meanwhile, I was criticised for pointing out that that contractor hadn't done any work for weeks and wasn't pulling their weight. Instead of being seen as a leader, I was branded a troublemaker who wasn't a team player. Even during events like Breast Cancer Awareness Morning Teas, where women were superficially acknowledged for their contributions, the reality remained that men were the ones getting promoted. When it came time to assign tasks like cleaning the kitchen or stacking the dishwasher, it was always the women who were expected to do it. The men left their messes and then complained when things weren't done, excusing themselves by saying that they were too busy with their important roles. And yet these same men thought they were different from John. They believed that by quietly distancing themselves from his behaviour or offering half-hearted apologies, they were somehow better. But they weren't. They stood by while John stole my ideas, insulted me, and perpetuated a system where women were consistently overlooked and undervalued. Apologies didn't change the fact that they enabled this toxic culture by doing nothing to stop it. The men just kept promoting each other, and no one ever said anything that every single man was in the senior leadership team, and every single woman except me. Looking back, I see how insidious that workplace was, not just because of John's blatant abuse towards me, but because of the complicity of the men who allowed it to continue. They thought they were better, but they weren't. Their silence and inaction spoke volumes. It took me a long time to find my voice and realize that I deserved better.
Thank you so much for sharing, Candace. Shout out to you. I know that was a really difficult thing to speak to me about. So emotional abuse, as listed in the lived experience example, can have a really big impact on workplaces because the person doesn't always speak up. They may feel like no one will listen. They're causing trouble. It will make the incident worse. This kind of secretive workplace bullying is really hard to prove. There's a few different reasons. Number one would be quite covert. It can be subtle, hard to detect. Unlike really overt types of bullying, yelling, insults, it can be discreet behaviours like exclusion, gossip, undermining someone's work, giving them the silent treatment that may not leave a clear trace. So the person may not speak up because they feel like they're being too sensitive. It doesn't sound like enough. There's also a lack of visible evidence, and it doesn't, you know, secretive workplace bullying doesn't leave bruises or offensive messages. It's not concrete. There's not a lot of written proof or recordings. This invisibility means that the perpetrator can deny the behavior or say it's a misunderstanding or the person's being too sensitive or it's workplace dynamics. Oh, I'm so sorry. It's totally fine. I didn't mean to. Oh, I didn't realize you were so sensitive. And it's this type of behavior that stops people from reporting it. It also really happens in a series of small and isolated incidents. Each incident on its own may seem really minor and insignificant, like, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to send you the email. Oh, did I not invite you? Or a small, subtle kind of like jab in a meeting. But it's when these are repeated over time that the pattern emerges. But if you listed the incidents, they don't really form a compelling case. So then it's harder to build evidence that it proves ongoing harassment. When the bullying is subtle, victims are often questioning around whether they're misinterpreting the situation. The perpetrator may frame their actions as misunderstanding, jokes, tough love, leaving victims uncertain about whether they're being targeted or are they overreacting. This leaves feelings of self-doubt and they're less likely to report. They may have a fear of retaliation or isolation. So often the person doesn't want to speak up because they fear retaliation. They fear that the perpetrator will hold more power or influence. It will make them stay quiet. It might make them feel worse about their situation or damage their reputation, or they're concerned that the perpetrator will get worse. It's also often done where there's no witnesses. So there's your word against mine situation. If you repeat the actual words, they could be seen as innocent, air quoting, but the tone may be the issue. Often these perpetrators are really strategic and they make sure that they target people when they're alone, or that they might be someone that they think probably won't speak up, or they're in a position of less power. Even they might find that they will bully or berate somebody in front of maybe a perpetrator's friend who will make it seem okay. This type really takes a cumulative effect and it's really significant emotional toll. The self-esteem is eroded over time and it makes it really hard to articulate the problem or then assert themselves because it's been going on for so long. And it can be really challenging to maintain a clear version of what it is happening when you're explaining it to others because it's so insidious and small but repetitious and in a pattern, and it can be really difficult to explain. A lot of the time, this type of bullying is normalized. It's just part of the culture and it's usually happens in more of a toxic workplace. And, you know, the management may not be supportive. They may downplay the concerns. They may say, it's not really that big a deal. Why don't you go get your own counseling? Or they, you know, the person may not feel that their complaint's being taken seriously. Often these perpetrators are very manipulative. They're very skilled and they know how to maintain a positive public image whilst also being quite harmful and having quite harmful behavior in private. They can really present themselves as friendly, helpful, professional, and then it makes it even harder for the person to speak up if they're convinced they're being targeted, because it may seem really almost unbelievable to others. There's also a really lack of clear definition. So it's really obvious if you get physically struck, hit, abused, or it's in writing or people see it. But it can be really hard for people to label the experience as bullying or to report or take action if the behavior doesn't actually fit into the existing framework neatly. And it's the combination of subtle bullying, the lack of evidence, manipulation that makes it hard to prove. Without clear-cut incidents, it can be really challenging to get attention to the abuse. It's quite similar really to coercive control or emotional abuse. So what can employers do to stop this behavior? If you are concerned that there is a bully that you're working with, maybe they're targeting someone else, you're supporting them, but they don't know what to do and you don't know what to do, or you are getting bullied and you don't feel like you can say something. So reporting is number one. I don't want us to just not report it because we don't think it will go anywhere. If you've done that, it hasn't worked. You then go to workplace health and safety and all the other stuff in the show notes. A proactive way of addressing this would be to have really clear anti-bullying policies in the company. If you were to create clear anti-bullying policies, you would define both overt and covert forms of bullying. These policies would include, one, defining bullying and defining less obvious forms of exclusion, undermining work or gossip. If you were to decline it clearly, the people that are being bullied would feel safer that these particular behaviors, number one, they're not allowed, and number two, here they are and here's all the instances that it's happened to me over the last month. But if the perpetrator is saying things like, you're being too sensitive, you can't take a joke, you shouldn't be leadership if you can't have a conversation, if they're saying things like that and it's not defined, the person that's being bullied probably are not going to be able to speak up or not going to be confident to speak up. There also needs to be really clear reporting procedures on how they can report bullying confidentially and how confidential it does remain. It's always a question in someone's mind, I think, is it confidential? At what point does it get released? And what are the consequences for that bullying? Regardless of how subtle or secretive it is, what is the consequences? Because if there are no consequences, the person being bullied would rightly so think, what's the point? And also there needs to be protection. Protection for the person that reports it. Are they at risk of retaliation? Will it get worse? And they need to feel safe when they're reporting the issues. We also need to see more education and training. We need to recognise, address and prevent workplace bullying. And this can be bullying and awareness, because I absolutely do not want to defend these perpetrators for a second. I can't stand bullies. But I actually wonder at times whether people actually know that they're bullying, because some of these people have got quite negative patterns of relationships. And I actually wonder if they can see how their behavior affects others and what a friendship should look like. I actually wonder if these bullies are aware, or maybe a part of them is aware, that they're probably not doing the right thing, but maybe they don't know what to do. So we need to help everybody see what subtle types of bullying looks like: exclusion, withholding information, sabotaging work. Because again, the more light we shed on this issue, the less likely it will be to occur, because the person's going to be caught out. There also should be anonymous reporting systems. And the person that's bullied, particularly covertly, are going to be probably hesitant to report due to fear of retaliation or not being believed. Anonymous reporting systems can really encourage employees to come forward without fear. They should be easily accessible, confidential, and the employee should be able to report incidents without disclosing identity. And it should also include a way that they're going to follow up or investigate, which will protect the person who's anonymous. The other way to do it as well is to possibly combat a toxic workplace by starting to improve the culture. This involves promoting respect, encouraging open communication and collaboration. 2, I love this one. Establishing a zero tolerance approach to toxic behavior, no matter how subtle. 3, and to celebrate diversity and inclusion. And this is to make employees feel valued and that discriminative behavior is addressed, but also because I think that a lot of the bullies really target people that are in minorities or seen as more weak, easier, less likely to say something. And so if your workplace is openly celebrating diversity, you may find that the bully is less likely to target those particular people. There also needs to be regular monitoring and feedback, employee surveys, exit interviews. You'd be surprised at what people will say on an exit interview. And also to gauge employees' well-being and assess whether they feel safe and supported. There also needs to be safe channels for dialogue, like open door policies, support groups, you know, mentorship. But I think really there's a couple of really main ones, and this one would be one of my main ones, which would be hold perpetrators accountable. There really needs to be consistent and transparent consequences for those that are engaging in bullying behavior. And this can be an investigation where it's reported, and there is a thorough and unbiased investigation. There can be disciplinary action and follow-up. By holding these people accountable, they are less likely to do it. And when we are holding a perpetrator accountable and providing a framework for what they should be doing instead, it is difficult for them to continue. Also, I love this one, encouraging bystanders to speak up. The bystanders play a critical role in identifying and stopping covert bullying. Organizations should encourage employees to support victims to report bullying and to empower colleagues. And, you know, then there's more information that I can have in the show notes around seeking psychological help for yourself afterwards, or leadership role modeling to show people how they should behave. It can be a really challenging issue to tackle, but I think the clearer the policy is, the stronger the leadership is, and a culture that promotes respect and accountability, it can be addressed effectively. And to create the environment where everyone feels safe and valued and empowered to speak up is super important. So I appreciate you staying with me this episode. I can know it can be a heavier topic. And if it doesn't affect you at the moment, you might be like, oh, well, why would I listen to it? Why? Because someone that you know will be affected. This is actually quite a widespread issue, but it's also a really important issue. And why should the person who's being bullied leave the job? Because if they leave, the perpetrator continues. And even if you're in a small company, there may not be every single one of these preventative measures. But maybe you can ask, hey, I was reading about this. What can we do? how can we make the policies a bit clearer? I think this would be really important as we expand. You don't have to make it about you, but you can make it as this is my positive contribution, which will make the workplace better for everybody. And also the other point is that workplace bullying and domestic violence are often connected, and one will often reinforce or exacerbate the other. So the effects of workplace bullying can contribute to domestic violence because it's creating that unequal power play. And I think at least talking about it on this mini series, sharing it, listening to it. I hope that this has been beneficial, and I'm going to be putting all of the information in the show notes. If you need more help, you'd like to access services and support, again, it's all in the show notes. I hope this was valuable. Take care of you and the others around you. We must stick together. Thank you so much for your time, and I hope you found this valuable.
The key message here is you are not alone. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, follow us on Instagram or head over and join our amazing ADHD Mums Podcast Facebook community. Everything you do matters and helps to spread the word about what neurodiversity in females looks like.